We're looking now across the Irish Sea to Liverpool, a city with a strong Irish heritage. Many of those escaping the Great Hunger in the mid-19th century passed through Liverpool and many stayed.
We're looking now
in 1851, for example, Irish-born people accounted for over 22% of the city's population. A significant number of those migrants spoke the Irish language, and indeed some of them spoke no English. Tony Birtle is a Liverpool-born Irish language teacher and the author of the book A Hidden History, The Irish Language in Liverpool, on Gaeilge I Léirfúil. Tony, you're very welcome indeed to the History Show.
Thank you.
Could you start by telling us a bit about your own background and how you became interested, a Liverpool man, in the Irish language?
Well, I was born here in the city in 1954. My mother and her sisters came over from Ireland to train as nurses before the Second World War, and they became part of the very large Irish community here in Liverpool. I grew up, I suppose, hearing the language in the background. They would kind of use Irish expressions and phrases in their conversations with each other, and they would listen to Radio Athlone, as it was called then, which sometimes broadcast programmes and songs in Irish. So I was familiar with the Irish language, and I was kind of intrigued by it because they didn't seem to speak it very much, unlike the Welsh, for example. The Welsh community would speak Welsh all the time out on the street, or say the Chinese community would speak Cantonese all the time. The Irish community only ever seemed to speak the odd word, and so this made me intrigued by it.
And as far as you know, how far back does the Irish presence in Liverpool go? We tend to think of Liverpool as a very Irish city, but when did that actually begin?
Well, most people point to 1207. That was the year that King John granted Liverpool the status as a borough. He wanted to use it, the small port there, as a base to invade Ireland. And so from 1207 onwards, you get this flow of shipping between Liverpool and Ireland. And this port expanded because of that.
In your book, you cite some fascinating examples of the prevalence of the language in the mid-19th century. Tell us, for example, about the appeal to the Vatican for more Irish-speaking priests.
Yeah, this was a petition in 1842 that was signed by 24,000 Irish people, which represented just about half of the Irish community in the city. They said to the Vatican that many of them were unable to attend confession because they didn't have enough English, and most of the priests couldn't speak Irish. They were English-speaking priests, so the Irish community were being neglected when it came to the sacraments, and so they wanted more Irish-speaking priests to be sent to the city.
Now, you write also, obviously, about the impact of the famine, and as hundreds of thousands of people fled Ireland, cheap fares from Dublin to Liverpool made Merseyside a popular destination. Now, obviously, not all of those people stayed in Liverpool. Many of them went to other English cities. Many of them subsequently migrated to the USA and to Canada. But a lot of them did actually stay in Liverpool, didn't they?
They did indeed. And we have statistics for the numbers of them who spoke Irish for the year 1850, because an Anglican clergyman, Abraham Hume, who was into the use of statistics, he conducted a survey in the area of Liverpool that he worked in near the city centre. And he and his workers went around each house asking people how many people lived in the house and what religion they were and so on. And one of the questions in his survey was, Irish spoken, do you speak Irish? Sure enough, we find in some roads 90% of the people in streets in this area were speaking Irish. So you're talking about thousands of people within a very small area. So this would have represented, a viable linguistic community.
One of the themes of the book is the attitude of both Catholic and Protestant churchmen towards the Irish language during this period. Why did the Catholic Church have, as you put it yourself, an uneasy relationship with the language?
Liverpool is situated in Lancashire, which is the strongest county for Catholicism. These were indigenous English Catholics. And the Catholic Church seemed to regard the influx of Irish immigrants as bolstering that this was going to make Lancashire even more Catholic. And they seemed to want those Irish Catholics to assimilate as quickly as possible with the local Catholic Church. And so they did not go out of their way to promote the Irish language, you know, to send over Irish priests, or even name churches after Irish saints. There was comparatively few churches named after Irish saints. So they really wanted Irish Catholics to speak English and just mix with the indigenous Catholic population.
You also write about the Irish language as a vehicle for conversion. What are your particular thoughts on that subject?
Well, one of the tenets of the Reformation was that everybody had the right to read the Bible in their own language. And so the Protestants were very keen to translate the Bible into various languages. And included amongst these was Irish. So you couldn't say it was just Irish that they were targeting. And the Douay English College on the continent, they published a Bible in English, you know, translated from Latin into English in 1610. So the Catholic Church, you know, did, you know, produce a Bible in English to rival the Protestant Bible. But unfortunately, they did not produce a Bible in Irish. Archbishop John MacHale, he translated the New Testament into Irish in 1846, but they didn't get around to translating the Old Testament, you know, the complete Bible, into Irish until about 1981. So really, if the Catholic Church had been concerned about Protestants poaching their members, they should have translated the Bible from Latin into Irish, same way that the Protestants did.
There was a phenomenon in Ireland when it came to the Irish translation of the King James Bible, that if you were literate in Irish, if you could read and write Irish as opposed to just speaking Irish, there was an assumption that you had learned that from the King James Bible. And there was an assumption also that you had been proselytized as a result. Did you ever come across any examples of that in Liverpool?
Yes, there was a famous incident. A group of poor famine refugees were issued with copies of the Bible and also food, and they were given refuge in an old house. And Catholic priests basically stormed the building, and at the time it said, quote, "Save them from the horrors of the authorized version," which, I mean, it's a book, for heaven's sake. It was hardly horrific. And they were getting free food with it as well. So it was perfectly understandable why poor, hungry people might wish to avail of free food and also a free copy of a Bible written in Irish.
So how large was the Irish-speaking community in Liverpool? Was it, for example, at its highest in post-famine years, when there would have been a huge influx from Irish-speaking areas, from Gaelic areas in Ireland?
Yes, it was. As I mentioned earlier, there's 24,000 people signed that petition in 1842. But, I mean, after the famine, just in the year 1847, 300,000 Irish people landed in Liverpool. Between 1845 and 1852, 1,300,000 Irish people crossed over to Liverpool and came through the gates of Clarence Dock. Clarence Dock was the dock where the Irish boats docked. So you're talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands of people speaking Irish. And it's on record as well that many of these people did not speak English. Professor Frank Neil, in his book Black 47, he has a number of coroner's reports, people who died of starvation in the streets of Liverpool, and their family members were unable to give evidence at the inquest because they were unable to speak English.
Now, the Irish language itself wasn't having a great time in Ireland in the latter half of the 19th century, and to some extent, what happens then is the Gaelic revival, the Cumann na Gaeilge, the Gaelic League, that revival at the end of the 19th century. How does that play out in Liverpool?
Well, by coincidence, the founder of Cumann na Gaeilge, Douglas Hyde, that organisation was founded in 1893, and he married a locally born German woman in Liverpool in 1893. So I remember when they were celebrating in 1993, the centenary of the foundation of the Gaelic League, I saw that he'd been married in a church called St. Nicholas. So I approached the vicar there, and sure enough, in the marriage register, there was Douglas Hyde's name signed in Irish, in the old letters, in the old script. So right from the word go, there was contact between Conradh na Gaeilge in Ireland and Irish speakers in Liverpool. And there were already existing Irish classes and Irish language activities going on in the city. And they just linked up with Conradh na Gaeilge when that organisation got going.
Talk to me a little bit also about the Liverpool dialect. People in Liverpool speak English in a very different way to people in London, for example. What kind of specific dialect arose in Liverpool? And do you think there was any contribution to that dialect from the Irish language?
Yeah, well, this was commented on by visitors to the city in the 19th century, that in this small area around the docks and that, people spoke completely different English from that spoken in the rest of Lancashire. And also there would be Irish words mixed up in it. And of course, some of these words survive today. So like that's smashing, you know, that's just is ma shin, which means that's good. What people say is smashing. And expressions like ta-ra, which you hear on Coronation Street and so on, that's recognised. It's just been a compressed form of tuara, take care. And in Liverpool, the people in Liverpool were termed as whackers because of their habit of dressing each other as whack, which of course is just mac, with a shaver went. So you just, hey, whack, you know, for hey, son, you know. So you'd hear people say, you know, ta-ra, whack, which is just ta-ra, a whack, you know. So you'd have these expressions mixed up with the English. Now, obviously, the local people were kind of unaware that they were Gaelic expressions. And sometimes they would be laughed at when they were used outside of the city. But there's plenty of them, all right. You know, the word faso, for example, you hear that used locally. And a slapper, which is a derogatory term for a woman, for a slovenly woman, that just comes from the Irish word slapog, which means the same thing. So there is still quite a few Irish words and expressions mixed up with the English that is in use locally today.
Well, Coramila Mahogath Osokthon Kora shot the book is called A Hidden History, The Irish Language in Liverpool, An Gaeilge I Léirfol, and it's available online at siopagaeilge.ie. Thank you very much indeed for talking to us today on The History Show, Tony.
Fáilte ort.